donation to the 3CR Radiothon campaign, supporting the Boldness, makes interviews with organisations such as the Anti-Poverty Centre possible. Go to the 3CR website at www.3cr.org.au, clicking on the donate button. Donations over $2 are tax deductible. Now, let's listen to what Kirsten O'Connell from the Anti-Poverty Centre has to say about the 2026 federal budget. Welcome to this special edition of The Boldness on 3CR, 8:55 a.m. The Boldness is about lived experience of disability. My name is Rafael Caleb. I am your host for today. Today we have been joined by Kirsten O'Connell, a spokesperson from the Anti-Poverty Centre. We're both basically in a lot of shock. We are responding to the Anthony Albanese Labor budget, if you want to call it a budget. I don't know if you could actually call it a budget, and what it actually means for people with a disability. What are your thoughts on this, Kirsten?
Thanks, Rafael. My thoughts are hard to express. I and so many of us who either rely on the disability supports that exist, which we know aren't perfect, or are not even able to access the disability supports we need, I think we're feeling a lot of grief and a lot of despair and a lot of fear for ourselves and our communities. I know that I'm likely one of the people who will lose access to the NDIS because I've been watching the Labor government's anti-autistic rhetoric over the last 4 years, laying the foundation for these cuts. But I also know that autistic people won't be the only ones hurt by them.
Kirsten, part of this, we were talking before this special broadcast, you managed to lose your voice. Look, but that's exactly what this budget, and it's I don't even know if I could really honestly describe it as a budget. I too would be speechless. I put it to you this way, losing your voice is probably an appropriate response to this, because this budget effectively silences people. Any thoughts on this one?
Absolutely. And it doesn't just discard disabled people's voices. We know that disabled people for a long time have been talking about what we need to change in the NDIS, talking about how the providers who profit from our disabilities and our needs for support have been treating us unfairly and charging too much compared to what they charge non-disabled people, because they know the government is footing the bill. And meanwhile, we're being blamed for the cost of the NDIS, which whatever the NDIS costs shouldn't matter, because it is supposed to be about making sure that we can participate in society on an equal basis with other people, and it is supposed to give us choice and control. But the changes that have already been made to the NDIS over the last couple of years have taken away some of our choices, and that's only going to get worse. So despite disabled people making very clear to this government for a long time what needed to change, they're not including disabled people in the conversations about what they're going to do, and they haven't listened to the things that we actually need that might even save them some of the money that they're looking for. At the end of the day, it is these for-profit providers and non-profit providers who make political donations and hobnob with politicians at parties who are getting their way and getting what works for them, and the rest of us are the ones who lose.
Well, we're going to do a little call out, personal promo. The Boldness actually spoke with Giancarlo Di Vera, who is the chief executive Officer of being the mental health peak body in New South Wales about the response to all the cuts to the National Disability Insurance Scheme. The Boldness has spoken with people with disabilities, with Megan Spindler, who was the acting CEO. And look, the anti-poverty centre is actually speaking up again about these cuts to the NDIS, but we can listen to those podcasts back about what is actually happening there. And I'm going to actually read out a direct quote from the anti-poverty centre, or the parts of it, and it actually highlights the inequalities between the haves and the have-nots. And the truth is, people with disability on income support almost invariably are not on the have-nots. They're not haves to even start with. And it's amazing that they're actually including anything. But this is what the quote actually has to say, and it is one from the Anti-Poverty Centre, is the Albanese government has again ignored the popular and necessary demand to increase the rate of Social Security payments as inflation and unemployment continues to rise. At the same time, housing and bills are hurting people on higher incomes. The poorest, that means people with disability, drowned a long time ago. It's kind of like the Great Flood all over again.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been going backwards for a long time in terms of Centrelink payment adequacy. And picking up on what you were also just saying about, talking about poverty, we know that even though the NDIS is available to people regardless of their income, which is a good thing, we hear a lot of discussion about how from more mainstream nonprofits talking about how all of these supports should be more targeted. But what we know is that when programs like public health and public education are more widely available to everyone in the community, they have more support. And so we need to keep that with the NDIS. But because Centrelink payments are so low, very few people who are living on a Centrelink payment can actually pay for all the medical reports that you need just to try and prove that you need that support. And I am very, very lucky that someone else paid for my reports, because I couldn't be on the NDIS if that didn't happen. And most people don't have someone in their life who can do that for them. So disabled people are more likely to be living in poverty, more likely to be discriminated against in the workplace, more likely to be unemployed, more likely to be on the job seeker payment than people who don't have a disability and can't get the reports to get on the disability support pension either. So too many people in poverty who have the exact same disabilities as people in better financial circumstances already aren't getting equal treatment on the NDIS. So we have higher living costs than people who don't have disabilities, where more likely to be in poverty and less likely to be able to get on the NDIS to help with that.
Look, and I totally get this thing about the National Disability Insurance Scheme, that I do have Asperger's syndrome. I mean, kind of like the official report came 40 years too late to really actually help me. This is after, as a teenager, complaining about the whole thing, about the federal budget. I'm not even too sure if we actually have a government. Well, it's not my government anyway. But the point was, how it relates to the National Disability Insurance Scheme. I had a 7-page clear-cut report from a psychologist after 25 hours of testing minimum to satisfy medical and scientific reasons. This is a permanent condition. I've had it my whole life. And it actually says, Raph will find it very difficult in the community at the best of times. And I remember going to a NDIS assessment to see if I could actually apply for it. Now, it had cost $5,000 4 years earlier, and I was told I would have to provide another report with more recent documentation so they could be sure. And I just said, I'd sooner starve and I won't do it because this is insane, literally insane to go ahead with this. And even the stuff about with the federal budget, with some of the things, the $360 million has been announced to improve employment services, with 26 and a half million set aside to prop up the collapsed national consumer service line. And Minister Amanda Rishworth knows that millions of people over the years have had their payments unlawfully suspended or cancelled, and the Department of Employment and Workplace Relations is doing everything in their power to cover up this serious issue. Well, I would actually say that the federal budget is an actual cover-up about, it's actually an idea that we will reduce the numbers of people with a disability because they won't be able to prove they actually have a disability. So it shows that our policies actually would be working, which clearly they are not actually working. It just becomes hidden unemployment where people can't actually work. And further to this one, with the amount of payments that have been unlawfully suspended and cancelled, well, I suppose if you're on hold for about 4 hours or so, you can't afford the phone bill anyway, so you get cut off for not complying. What are your thoughts on that one, Kristen?
Well, I, for one, and I'm sure I'm not alone, am pretty sick of the government saying they're going to end poverty for disabled people by getting us all into jobs, when not only with some of our disabilities will we never realistically fit into traditional jobs, but also employer attitudes and workplaces are not set up for disabled people. And this tiny amount of money, $300 million, to target disabled people and to try and change us so that we fit more easily into those boxes, instead of targeting employers and the labour market to make them change, to respond to the social model of disability and acknowledge that it is actually the way these systems are set up that exclude us. It's not our lack of capacity or interest or aspiration. And so we are frustrated every single time this issue comes up with this government and the ones before it, that effectively they're telling disabled people the best form of welfare is a job. And if you can't get yourself out of poverty, we're not going to do it for you. And these kinds of programs are designed to punish. The Reserve Bank of Australia requires that there be 4 to 5% of people unemployed. That doesn't just mean that gets evenly applied across the community. It means people who experience discrimination, whether it's because of our disability, whether it's because you're a First Nations person, or a migrant or a single parent, all of these types of discrimination get applied so that we're all overrepresented in these figures of who is unemployed and who relies on Centrelink payments. So that is beyond our control. And then they have these very brutal systems where your payment will get cut off at a moment's notice by an unaccountable outsourced provider, or welfare cop, as we call them, because they don't provide anything. All they do is punish people and police people. And we now have a Commonwealth Ombudsman's report that came out at the end of last year, putting a huge question mark over the lawfulness of all this. And the government is pretending it's not happening and thinking it can just make all of this punishment legal by spending this money, instead of actually providing a supportive welfare system and real employment programs that are voluntary and that are designed by and for disabled people to help us deal with workplaces that need to improve and to invest in improving those workplaces and advocating for us in them.
On a practical side, I live down in Melbourne, and essentially I think it was City of Melbourne or the Victorian government is basically saying, well, we really should have people working in the offices in the city because it's classed as a CBD, non-residential. And from a people with disabilities perspective, one, it's unlimited housing, which actually would be available. That's actually one point of it. But with a person from persons as a disability, at least if people have the option of working from home, there is actually, I would say, a higher probability the place is actually going to be either more accessible and they're going to be able to have what they do and actually do a better job, because the facts are with that people with a disability could have less sick days, they're more loyal to their employees, they actually do an extremely good job. All they've got to be able to do is go this, but they go into these places where you've got barriers, and the federal budget, which is just being released, does nothing to address any of these inequalities to make it worse, and they have made it a lot worse. And on top of that, with the way that AI is going, I can just see this is going to be RoboDebt part two, seriously, and they haven't finished doing the payouts yet. They haven't even... I said, like you, Kristen, I am very much in shock over what has actually happened.
Yes, it's disturbing. And, you know, you picked up on the inequality there. It's also governments are making choices, right? They don't have no money. They have $56 billion to spend on war and war machines, and they have money to spend on housing American troops on this continent in what is effectively public housing, but they don't want to spend money on the supports that would keep our communities flourishing or help our communities flourish, not keep them flourishing. At the moment, we're all threadbare. And, you know, I think they really hope to keep these conversations abstract, and they hope to keep them isolated. Very few people over the past few days since the budget was announced have been talking about those things together, talking about the fact that for all of the headlines about tax changes, very little additional tax is going to be paid by rich and wealthy people. No additional tax is going to be paid by corporations. And all of this money going out the door on these tax breaks, on spending that contributes to harm instead of stopping it, alongside the reality of what it means in our lives, right? We know that already the poverty level of Centrelink payments and some of the failures in the NDIS lead to deaths. They lead to deaths by suicide, and they lead to deaths from neglect. And we know that these changes and this refusal to increase Centrelink payments are going to see that go up. And that's what's getting lost when everybody talks about what the NDIS costs.
Well, is it, Kristen, is that we really, really are sort of running out of time, and it's actually a really fascinating conversation we're actually having about the federal budget or lack of budget, more to the point around people, what it has actually done for people with a disability. And the answer is it actually hasn't done anything that actually wasn't more expected. More to the point, there might be all this money they're putting into supplying weapons for war, but they've actually declared an open war on people with a disability by what is actually happening in this budget for the lack of it. Now, what would be a preferable budget? Off the top of your head, what would the Anti-Poverty Centre prefer to the budget to have looked like? And for other people, what it could look like instead?
Thanks, Raphael. I think the first and most urgent and one of the easiest things the government can do is ensure that all Centrelink payments are at least at the Henderson poverty line, which is currently about $690 a week. Then they should work with disabled people and unemployed people about the programs that we want to access and design those with us, whether we're talking about employment programs, talking about disability supports, or anything else that we need to access in our lives. That includes health, that includes education. Let's design those things together. And another massive area for improvement is that instead of spending $15 billion a year on handing out tax breaks to property investors, which is going to continue despite the changes the government has announced to new property investment, directly invest in buying and building public homes, maintaining and upgrading the public homes that we already have to make sure everyone who wants to live in public housing can do so in a high quality, beautiful home. obviously many of us have an urgent need for secure housing that we can actually afford and that is accessible. But over time, we will have a much more healthy public housing system if all kinds of people are allowed to live in public homes, just like they could in the past. And I think that's just a few things we would do. They could save some money by abolishing cashless welfare and income control programs and a few other really harmful things. And of course, stop spending on war machines, stop creating more disabled people overseas at the expense of disabled people here.
One of those things is that have you got any thoughts, has the Andy Pofford Centre got any thoughts on how people with a disability can come together? And it's not even to actually show unity and solidarity, but it's actually to have weight. It's actually almost like this budget, for the want of a better word. It's kind of like after the funeral, this is a wake to people with a disability, to low income earners, to actually say, well, look, in those great words from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, thanks for all the fish, because basically the way it's going, the only way that people with disability will be able to actually maybe have some type of food is if someone gives them a fishing rod instead of, what do you call it, giving them income support. Any events or something like that possibly coming up in the future there, Kristen?
Yes, we do. And you're absolutely right. Yes, and you're absolutely right. It is clear that this government isn't going to provide the support that we need. And so it is now, and we know that there's enormous support among the community, the broader community, for disabled people and for people in poverty. So over the next year, we are going to be starting to do a lot more community events in person and online. And so that is to try and help us all feel a sense of togetherness and to combat that isolation that comes from poverty. When we do in-person events, we actually make sure that we cover every cost for someone to come along. We ask disabled people, what do you need to be able to participate in person if that's something you want to do? And of course, we run online events as well. And so people can go to our social media. We are on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Blue Sky. We are on TikTok, but we're not as active there. And you can hear about the events we have coming up. We also have a Linktree, and our Linktree is where we've been listing a couple of events that are already planned, and it's where we will add more. You can sign up to receive information from us there as well. So that's linktr.antipovertycent. And so if people go there, they can find out about what's coming up. If you do want to come along to an event, when you sign up, you can provide information about what sort of accessibility accommodations would help you participate.
And Kristen, something like we're being very caught up with the federal budget, but what are the other areas and the other issues and campaigns that the Anti-Poverty Centre does run? There's quite a lot of them where they do a lot of advocacy work, but we'd like to hear it from Kirsten's mouth as one of the spokespeople, not the horse's mouth, okay?
That's right, and we are doing a lot. I think one of the things we will be working on more is mutual aid and connecting people with community-based services that are not run by these huge corporate charities. So that will be more information will be coming on those. But of course, one of our biggest campaigns that we have been working on tirelessly now since we started is to end compulsory activities for people on social security payments, because they do not help us. They only line the pockets of those big charities and corporations who run that welfare cop service for government. We provide individual support to people who are having trouble with their job agency or with Centrelink. So people can find us through our social media and message us there, or they can send us an email via our website, and we can do our best to support individuals with any negotiation they're trying to have or to solve problems and unfair treatment that they've experienced in the welfare system.
Well, is it? Thank you very much for your time, Kristen. We're just going to actually, you just repeat the Anti-Poverty website. That's probably the best way for people to be learn more about it. And that website is?
antipovertycentre.org.
Thank you very much for your time, Kristen, who is one of the spokespeople from the Anti-Poverty Centre, talking in responding to the federal budget, because I have a lot of trouble pronouncing that word budget, because it's not a budget. It's been a war on people with a disability, and that's actually what it is. Thank you very much for your time, Kristen, for sharing your thoughts. And it's been great talking with you. And this has been a special edition of The Boldness on 3CR, 8:55 a.m. Thank you for joining us tonight.